Who is Newton?
Who is Newton? Newton is spontaneous. Newton is intelligent. Newton is worldly. Newton is friendly.
And I'm Mel Newton, and this is my wife, Helen Newton.
Newton is like your guardian angel, always looking for ways to help you out. Newton talks to fax machines and laser printers, to telephones and computers. Newton is a great communicator. Newton is for all you mobile professionals out there who like cool stuff.
Thank you.
The best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah, and for all of you in our cult cast subreddit asking for the long hello, that one was for you. Joining me today, he's got buns of steel and a heart of gold. Buster Kiney is here.
Hey,
hey, Buster. Also joining us is here to regale us with more weird and wacky stories from the cult of Mac. David Pierini, my bad, David, sorry.
Close enough. Hello, hello.
Your last name is kind of like a tongue twister for me. Pierini. It's like it has like almost no consonants.
Well, just say Pierini, because that's how we pronounce it.
Oh, okay. So I'm like overdoing it then.
That's all right.
Leander Kenny can't join us today because he can't figure out how to get his internet working. No surprise, right? This happens like once every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I guess his car got broken into again. Right, David?
That's what I understand, yeah. Hopefully he didn't have all of his Apple devices in the car this time.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. And if they were in the car, hopefully he had the password set on them. Right. Did he ever tell you that story about what happened last time?
He did. He wrote about it, too, which was cool.
Leander Kenny, for those that didn't hear the story, he was trying to let his son use his Mac. So his son was annoyed that it had a password on it or something like that, right? And So he took the passwords off, and then shortly thereafter, someone stole his Mac, and he realized like all of his passwords and everything were all stored in there. So this whoever stole it could like go around and like log into everything as Leander Kenny. I don't think he ever got that machine back, did he?
No.
I don't think so.
And now he's got like 10 people using his identity.
Could we get one of them to join us today?
Yeah, maybe we could get one of them to join us. They already have all of his logins.
That's right.
They probably know just as much about Apple as Leander does. I jest, of course. Leander's written like 100 books. Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. Tim Cook has promised us iPhone features that you've never dreamed of. We'll be talking about that. Buster, I know you're not super excited about this, but we're going to be talking about Apple's deal with China. It was once the promised land for Apple. It seemed like their business there was booming, and that was going to be the next place to really boost their profits, and it was going to be even bigger than the U.S. eventually. And there's been some weird stuff happening to Apple in China, so I at least wanted to go over some of it, because it's affecting their stock price. I mean, some of you who follow Apple stock have probably noticed it took a big hit in the last 2 weeks. A huge hit. It dropped like almost $15. So we'll be talking about that. If you stay tuned to the end, David's going to be sharing with us some more weird stories from the cult of Mac. David, what are we going to be discussing this week?
We are going to talk about a small subsection of the cult that still relies upon the Newton for their personal management.
Okay, now the key word being relies.
Yes.
These are not people that just still have a Newton around and use it as a novelty. Like, these people are actually still using the Newton like it were an iPhone.
Well, you know, a lot of these folks just, they loved their Newton. Newton was, you know, just starting to come into its own when Steve Jobs discontinued the program. So, but we can talk about that at the end of the cast.
Let's do that.
Yeah,
and we're also going to be doing a all new Get to Know Your Cultist. This time, we got questions from our new Reddit, the cultcast.reddit.com. And we will be covering some of those. We have some great questions this week for your entertainment. Before we jump into the first news item of the day, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. If you need a website for any reason, if you have a business, if you just need to have a presence on the web, maybe you want to build a blog, maybe you want to build an e-commerce website, Squarespace is phenomenal. We run the cultcast.com on Squarespace. I use Squarespace for the cultcloth.co e-commerce website. And here's what I love about Squarespace. You can build a beautiful website quickly. I mean, within 2 minutes, you could have a website up and running. Your website will be beautiful. It will look great on any device that visits. But it has an insane amount of customizability. You can go in there without knowing any code, use their drag and drop interface to build a website that looks drastically different from mine. If we were to start with the same template, you and I, and we each spent an hour, you could change the fonts, the colors, the images, everything, and I could do the same, and our websites would look totally different. So with Squarespace, you're not just getting ease of use, you're getting an immense amount of customizability without having to know how to code or do any of that stuff. That's what makes Squarespace so great. I encourage you to check it out. You can get a 2-week free trial. Build a website yourself. And if you like what you have, you can continue with Squarespace. Use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll get 10% off your first order. And if you order a year of service, you will get a free domain name. Thank you to Squarespace at squarespace.com. Okay, Buster.
Yes.
Let's talk about Tim Cook making us sweet promises.
He makes these promises a lot.
He does. Well, normally we wouldn't even talk about this, but here's what I thought made this relevant. So we've been talking a lot about how the next version of the iPhone is really not all that exciting. Like, we were expecting to get a huge upgrade to a new model that looked different than the current model, but it's turning out that the iPhone 7 is probably not going to be that. Here's what I think makes this story interesting. I was reading through some comments about next year and the year after, and somebody made a really good point. They said that 2017 is the iPhone's 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Did you realize that?
Yeah.
I didn't. And so I thought to myself, this actually makes a lot of sense. So this year, we're going to get the iPhone 6SS. As I think you coined it last episode. And then for their 10th year anniversary for the iPhone, don't you think they're going to have to blow off? They're going to have to blow off the hatches. Is that a term that anyone says?
I don't think so.
When they want to get serious about something. Well, they should, because it sounds serious, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're going to have to take that innovation to an all new level. You know?
Yeah, they're going to have to blow the hatches off that innovation.
iPhone
for sure.
X.
The iPhone X. Ooh, I kind of like that, actually. So yeah, they need to make the iPhone for the 10th anniversary something truly special. We've heard rumors of them returning to like the glass front and back design, which I personally really like. So that's why I thought Tim Cook's comments on the Mad Money show were particularly interesting. Any ideas on some of the features that they might include that we've never dreamed of?
Well, I mean, I think I saw somebody who said, well, I never dreamed of live photos, but yeah, you know,
hey,
so
you
it's
know,
like, okay, so these features I've never dreamed of could be totally lame, but
that's a good point. Yeah.
Maybe there's going to be a retinal scanner in there to go with Touch ID. Holographic 3D display, that would be cool.
So like when you have it on the table, it like just projects
up.
In Star Wars when they're having
Princess
those.
Leia is just like, and that Siri's just a projection. That would be awesome.
Okay. Oh, yeah, man. that would definitely blow my hatches off.
I can't really think of too many things that I need.
Are we excited about the dual lens rumor that has been floating around? They're talking about putting two lenses that may have an optical zoom, may not, but...
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I think it'll... I'm not sure it's going to be like a game changer the very first year, but I don't know.
We haven't seen a lot of credible rumors that show that the camera is going to be impressive.
Yeah.
So I really don't know what to expect. I mean, it could be cool. I just don't know if it's going to be super cool. I don't know if it's going to be an amazing feature or if it's just going to be another camera upgrade, I guess is how I feel about it.
There's this other, I forgot what it's called, but there's this new camera that it's, here it is. It's like shaped just like an iPhone. It's called Light, and it has 16 cameras on the back of it.
Yeah.
That thing looks, have you not seen this?
No.
It looks pretty crazy. And so, but it has 16 different camera sensors on it, and it's basically the shape of an iPhone. And so it's like, you need that many sensors to make like an amazing DSLR quality photo. Like from all those smartphone camera lenses. So I'm just thinking, like, with just two, it might be like a little bit weak, a slightly gimmicky feature that just gives you, you know, a little bit better photos. And you get like this, you can also do, what is it, after focus? So you can change the focus afterwards on those pictures. So it could be really cool.
Yeah, I kind of find the whole focus after the shot to be somewhat of a gimmick.
It was on the Lytro. Especially because you had to host your photos on Lytro's servers, so you can never actually, you know, do it on your own. Yeah, so it was totally gimmicky. But yeah, I think future uses could be better.
You said there was was it a phone that you were talking about that had 16 cameras?
It's called Light, and it's. Yeah. It has 16 lenses, and it's basically like the size of an iPhone. It's kind of,
but it's
in
not
the same
it's not like a phone. It's
no,
just
it's not a packet a phone. Okay. It's just a camera.
So it is looks it flat? Awesome. Like, what's the point of a camera like that?
It's basically supposed to be like a DSLR replacement.
Okay,
only
but it's super,
super slim. Yeah, like even smaller than like the Micro Four Thirds cameras, and it doesn't need extra lenses for you to get a wide picture. Or, you know, a zoomed in picture, because it can basically just use software to extrapolate like the focal length that you want through the 16 different lenses.
Is this a real product? Does it?
Yeah. I'll send you a link.
Okay. How much is it?
I think it's like less than 1,000, but it's super hard to get because they have only run the first production in limited numbers.
We got to get a review unit of that, dude.
Yeah, that's what I want.
I wonder if it's waterproof. I think you're the perfect person to find out.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, it would be
1600.
Nice. $1,600?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get like an actual nice mirrorless camera with a nice lens for $1,600. I mean, you can get a full frame camera used for that price.
Absolutely.
But this is smaller than that, and you don't need like prime lenses for like a 35 millimeter prime lens and then another zoom lens. It's all in this really sleek package, which with a 5-inch LCD on the back.
It might also be just incredible at low light.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine, David, like you have every single sensor taking a different exposure. And then it combines them all into one photograph.
Yeah.
The dynamic range on an image from that camera could be insane.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, if with this camera you can set different exposures for different lenses, you know, and then maybe sandwich, you know, a couple layers together so that you get that shadow detail. But then you also get, like, that beautiful dramatic sky.
Right.
It'll be interesting to get that camera in hand.
The Light camera, and you said it's pretty, like, has a pretty thin profile, Buster.
Yeah, it's a little bit thicker than your iPhone.
Wow. Okay, cool. I definitely want to see that thing in action. Okay, let's talk about Apple stock, Buster. Let's just try to fly through this. Okay,
it's on the downhill.
I mean, it took a major hit. Was it last week?
Last week and this week, I think they had 8 days of losses in a row, which was the first time that's happened in, I want to say, since 1997 when Steve Jobs came back.
And if you look at the stock charts, I was actually looking at it last week, and I don't think I realized I was looking at a short period of time. I thought I was looking at a long period of time because it was such a drastic fall off. I didn't realize it had happened pretty much in one day. I mean, it literally looks like their stock fell off a cliff. It starts off really high, and then a line goes straight down, and then it starts again at the bottom, and you're like, it's literally a cliff. Like, their stock literally fell off a cliff. And I was trying to figure out what was going on. And a lot of it kind of revolves around Carl Icahn, who sold off all of his Apple stock. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah, it's two things. I mean, first, Apple's earnings did not like do them any favors. They had their declining profits for the first time in forever. So that was what triggered it to go down. And then a few days after, then Carl Icahn says that he's already gotten rid of all of his shares and he has billions of dollars worth of shares. So that caused a lot of other investors to ditch their shares as well.
He made $3.5 billion off of his Apple stock, I read.
Yeah, something crazy like that.
$3.5 billion. All he did was purchase a product and resell it at a later date. That's nuts. But he was, when he was talking about why he sold his stock, his primary concern, he said, was what was going on in China. And for me, that came as a surprise because I had always thought that Apple in the last several years was doing really well in China. And they are. China's the second biggest market for Apple after the United States in terms of revenue. And but China is weird, man. I mean, they're treating Apple's business in a very strange way. And I thought this was at least worth discussing. Apple had opened iTunes and the iBook store in China. How many years ago? Was it like 2 or 3 years ago, Buster?
No, it was just last year.
It was last year.
Yeah.
And they got the go-ahead from the Chinese government. And as many of you probably know, the Chinese government controls a lot of the commerce in that country. And then I don't know if the Chinese government got irked at how popular Apple was becoming or if there were other concerns involved. But they recently shut down iTunes and the iBook store. And now people are wondering if China is kind of like shutting Apple out or trying to shut Apple out completely. Do you think that that's a possibility, Buster? Like they may end up not operating there?
I don't think so. I mean, what you're referring to is just one guy with the Eurasia Group who said it's possible that China could shut them out in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. They're not going to like shut Apple out, you know, anytime soon. I think the biggest problem for Apple in China is just the Chinese economy. Tim Cook already said that they're working to get iBooks and iTunes movies back up in China. So that's really not a problem. They just have to work with government regulators on it.
But when you say they're working to get it back up, like to get, what are they doing? Are they pulling out content
I think the Chinese government wants to have more control over what content, because I don't think they didn't care about iTunes, but they cared about iTunes movies, maybe documentaries, and then of course the iBook store, which you could get anti-government literature from that. So that's what I'm guessing. They want to control anything that might be anti-government from getting into iPhone user in China's hands.
Okay, well, here's the other weird thing. So in 2002, Apple had filed for a trademark for the iPhone, right?
2002?
It was 2002.
Because there was another, but there was another company that filed for theirs in 2007. But it's so, for the reason why they're doing that is because it's for Apple filed it under hardware and computer, and the other person they filed it for leather goods.
So Apple didn't have a more encompassing trademark, so they only filed it specifically for technology.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's just how China works. Because Apple's argument was that, well, iPhone is a widely recognized name, so it should cover all these other areas.
Right.
And the Chinese legal authorities basically just said, these people using iPhone for their purses doesn't hurt the iPhone smartphone brand, and they don't compete against each other, so it's okay.
Basically. They don't compete against each other except when it comes to accessories, because this company, Xiangtong Tiandi Technology, sells a quote-unquote iPhone case that they brand iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And so they have the iPhone case, and Apple sells iPhone cases. So Apple's been trying to take this company to court and get them to stop using the iPhone trademark, even though they filed for the trademark first, Apple, that is. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese government said, yeah, no, we're going to let them go ahead and keep using the trademark for their products. I'm clearly not an expert on Chinese trademark law, though many of you may think that I am. I'm not. But I do think it's strange the Chinese government would go to Apple and say, yeah, you know, like, you're this big company and you clearly filed for this trademark first, but we're going to let this other company use your trademark and there's nothing you can do about it. That seems like a strange combative move, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's combative. I mean, it would be combative if they gave it to Huawei or whatever, or
if they gave it to Samsung.
Somebody, if they gave it to somebody that made it. I just feel like the China is already so completely lax with trademarks and intellectual properties as it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, one's a person, one's a smartphone. Why can't they both be called iPhone? Whatever.
Yeah. I'm going to be launching my own product line of iPhone snacks in China.
Yeah, I like that. Little waffles.
Yeah, it's going to be little waffles and cakes. The iPhone waffle cake company is what I'm calling
seaweed
it.
Seaweed snacks.
Yeah, it'll be seaweed snacks, which I actually really love. You know, all of my favorite kind of snack foods. And keep your eyes on that. If you're in China, keep your eyes out for that soon. I'll be launching my own line of firecrackers, too, the iPhone firecrackers. It's going to be a lot of different products.
And
that
the Firecracker S, right?
You're going to make
the Firecracker S is the next year's model, yeah. Please. But I can't speak about future products, David, please.
That's right. Remain secret.
I can't
secret.
Confirm or deny. Can't confirm or deny those products. Anyway, just something worth mentioning. China's clearly important for Apple. And when you see their stock price tank like this, you got to wonder, what is going on over there?
Do the Chinese have a brand loyalty? Like, would you say people who have used Apple devices in China have the same emotional attachment as, say, Apple fans in other countries? Like, I'm just sort of wondering if the Chinese will switch back and forth. You know, they got an iPhone 5S, but then one of the local manufacturers makes a phone and they buy that. Huawei,
yeah. I mean, I've never been to China, so I don't know them. And can't speak for the Chinese people at large. But from what I understand is the Chinese government does want to help local manufacturers get popular, like Huawei, instead of Apple.
So yeah. Unlike Buster, I can speak for the Chinese people, David. I have been authorized
so
to do
glad
so.
Someone can on this cult cast.
Yeah, I am. I am an expert on this topic. And they do love the iPhone. It's their favorite product. Much more so than Huawei and Samsung. They love it. They can't get enough of it. And they demand more iPhone in their country. And they're all upset about this iPhone leather case issue. As you can imagine, it's a big deal to them. So, you know, my thoughts are with the Chinese people as they go through this hard time. Let's move on, David. Let's talk about some weird and wacky stories from the Cult of Mac, shall we?
We should, yeah.
Let's talk about this Newton. Before we talk about the people who love the Newton, can you tell us when did the Newton come out? What was its life cycle and what was it meant to do?
So the Newton came out in 1993, and it was really the first portable computing device. It's you know, what we would call mobile technology or mobile computing today. It was a handheld device, and it was basically designed to be a personal assistant. You could take notes on it. You could keep a calendar. You could list all your contacts.
You could send faxes.
Yeah, at some of the later generations, you could do that. And you know, but the problem was in the very beginning, the handwriting recognition was not very good. And if this sounds familiar with anybody who's been the victim of autocorrect or Siri doesn't understand your commands, it was a lot like that. And so another problem with the Newton, though, was the price tag. It was like $699, and that was a lot of money, especially for that time.
Oh, yeah, jeez.
But, you know, Newton, or Apple, kept working on the Newton and came out with something like 10 different versions. There was even one called the E-Mate, which had a little keyboard with it. And just as their handwriting recognition got good was when Steve Jobs came back to Apple. And shortly after that, he discontinued the program. And some say it was because he really hated the Newton because of the stylus. But a lot of people think it was more of a personal thing because it was the pet project of some of the people who were responsible for him being forced
being
out of Apple.
Out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And there was even a, I talked to a guy who had organized a picket in 1998 outside of Apple to try and bring the Newton back. But, you know, there were a number of people who loved the Newton and they kept theirs going. And even to this day, there are people in kind of the Newton enthusiast group that continue to write software. They're trying to come up with, you know, a way for the Newton to receive, like, encrypted email.
yeah.
So, you know, there's people that keep that green light burning, so to speak, the screen.
Can I ask the obvious question? Why? Why not just upgrade to an iPhone? There's so many great devices out there now. What is so special about the Newton that makes them want to forsake all the new technology that's out there?
You know, everybody has a different reason. You know, I talked to one guy in Canada who he just loves keeping old technology running. Mm-hmm. But I also talked to, you know, another guy who has 15 dozen Newtons of various generations. He uses... He's never owned an iPad, and he uses like four different Newtons for the various task management needs that he has. But it was an you raise an interesting point because the very guy who organized that picket, Adam Tao, he formed a group that used to get together once a year in the Bay Area. A Newton users group, and he remembers about 2 weeks after the very first iPhone came out, and somebody brought an iPhone to that meeting, and Adam looked at it and says, "This is it. We have our Newton back." So some of the interest in keeping the Newton alive has died off as, you know, mobile computing has become a thing with the iPhone and the iPad to a great extent. But I talked to one collector who thinks that between the number of people on a North American users group list and all the different Newton users in the world, he thinks there's about 4,000 people around the world who still use Newtons, collect them. Yeah, so it's really something.
I get collecting Newtons.
Yeah.
It's the using Newtons and preferring Newton over current technology that's just kind of mind blowing to me. There seems to be isn't there an element of novelty for all these guys who keep the Newtons going? Like no one's using it because they think it's a superior device to what's available today, right?
Right. I mean, I think some of the people really loved the simplicity of it. It was a fairly, with the exception in the beginning, obviously, of the problems reading handwriting, it was a pretty easy device. You just use the stylus to touch the screen. You click on an icon, boom, there's your calendar. You know, I think, I don't know, I'm an older, I'm going to be 50 this year, and I still haven't figured out how to live with my iPad quite the way I do with my MacBook Pro. And you know, when I shut my computer down for the day, the iPad's, you know, it feels like work. It doesn't entertain me the way it does some other people. So I think it's just a personal preference for some.
Interesting.
But then also I think, you know, people feel like, hey, you know, in 20 years we have to be able to show people you know, the roots of our, you know, mobile computing. So, and this is definitely, you know, I think as time goes on, the Newton, which is considered a big tech failure on the part of Apple, is actually getting some respect, you know.
So these guys are like half museum curators, and they want to keep this technology going for future generations to see.
Yeah.
and then half those guys who decide in a particular decade that they're going to live the rest of their lives with the hairstyle from that decade and just keep it for the rest of their lives.
Well, and also, too, there's a MacGyver factor is what I call it, because people love taking some old piece of technology and making it work today and work in a way it never was intended to work. So you have people building media card slots for these things. They're plugging them into their computers and running internet off them. It's just really amazing. And I mean, I suppose we could laugh at, you know, people like, why would they do that when we have this great technology in the iPhone and the iPad? You know, but these are really smart people, and if they can figure out how to make a Newton run internet, say, then, you know, who knows what other problems they could solve. So I really came away with an appreciation, not only for the Newton, but for the people who keep these things running.
I mean, the whole thing is kind of funny when you hear someone's using a Newton still and doesn't want to use an iPhone, but I totally agree with you. It's a work of passion that these guys are doing, and I think it's pretty cool that they're keeping this old technology going and giving it new uses, because I do think that kind of thing is important. You know, it's kind of cool to have a device that still works and in 10 years be able to show it to someone and say, here's where Apple came from. You know, especially now that we have iPhones, you can look at the Newton and say, wow. I mean, some of the stuff that you see, you can watch videos on YouTube about the Newton, and some of the stuff that it did, you can see the iPhone does those same things, except it does them much better. And you can kind of see that evolution for Apple. And I think it's really cool to have that link to the past be alive and to have these guys be caring for that technology.
I think so, too, because when you look at, say, it in the aerospace industry, NASA, you know, for the longest time after they stopped going to the moon, they stopped building rockets. Well, now all of a sudden we want to get back into deep space and maybe go to Mars. And what are they doing? They're going to these salvage yards where NASA maybe, you know, sold off some of the old parts of the Saturn V rocket to sort of see how that stuff was made, you know, so that they can apply it to rocket building today or design today. And so, you know, Apple has said famously that they have no interest in their past, that they only have an eye on the future. And so, you know, it's really neat that there are some people who are kind of, you know, kind of historians of some of these, you know, these devices.
And that is an interesting point, isn't it? That Apple has no interest in preserving their own history.
No.
And keeping these... keeping a museum of their own devices. I mean, you would think that that would be important to them.
Yeah, you would think so too, but you know, they've been very public about you know, saying we don't have any plans to open a museum. And so it's, you know, up to these collectors and these you know, kind of, maybe, you know, sometimes some of these collectors are seen as eccentric, but, you know, these are really smart people. And, you know, I think down the road we're going to appreciate, you know, that they still have this old stuff going, even if it's, you know, kind of a wood-burning type of technology.
Yeah, good example. Well, this story and other stories like it are going to be included in the updated Cult of Mac book.
2.0,
yeah. Which I think was Leander Caney's first book, right?
The Cult of Mac came out in 2004, and as you know, a lot's changed with Apple since 2004.
Absolutely.
And a lot has changed with its fans. And, you know, we're going to be getting into people who have Steve Jobs tattoos. We're going to talk to some people who have created Steve Jobs-inspired art. So there's going to be a lot of fun stories in the coming weeks.
Well, if you need to talk to anyone with a seriously huge Tim Cook tattoo, you let me know.
I'm interested.
I'll bust my shirt off. You can take pictures.
I got to tell you,
I'll flex for you. It's going to be great.
This one guy who has his whole body is devoted to the history of technology. And he has reserved one of his pecs for Elon Musk's portrait.
Oh, how appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to put Elon Musk on your butt, on your body, I think your pec is a perfect place.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, it's strong. It's just right. It's right there.
Next
right?
to you my beating heart.
It's right next to your beating heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's
so
great.
We'll be talking about some of those folks. And, you know, it's just been great to, they're obviously subjects for stories, but they've been great teachers for me. So I've learned a lot, even the guys with the tattoos. So
when's the book coming out again? It's not for a while.
No,
right?
And I've got to talk to Leander about that, because I could just keep writing these stories. But at some point we got to say stop and, put it out on the press.
Right.
So I think I'll probably be working on this with him through part of the summer. And, by fall, maybe we'll have something to, take to the press. If I can, I'd like to give a shout out to Amy, who's been the editor on this project. She's been fantastic. She's kicked me in the butt when I needed it. And she's been, real supportive and giving me a structure for doing these stories. So.
Fantastic. Well, we will definitely tell you guys more about the book as that information becomes available. Before we move on to the last segment of the day, Get to Know Your Cultist, let me go ahead and say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep service was developed in-house, has a sleek design, and is delivered in a small, how did they do that, sized box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. And Casper's mattresses, they were constructed by a team of engineers that spent thousands of hours developing the mattress. It combines springy latex, supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right amount of sink and bounce. Plus, it's breathable, so you stay cool at night. And they're not ridiculously expensive. In fact, you can get a twin-size mattress for $500, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, $950 for a king. I don't think there's anywhere else where you can get a king-size mattress, a nice king-size mattress, for $950. And if you use code CULTCAST at checkout, you'll save $50 off any purchase. Plus, you get a 100-night home trial. You can order the bed, sleep on it, dance on it, jump on it, make sweet love on it for 100 nights. And if you don't like it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Check it out for yourself. Go to casper.com/cultcast. And you will get $50 towards any mattress purchase. That is casper.com/cultcast. I want to thank Casper for supporting this episode. Alrighty. This is the segment where we get to know each other. David, we've never had you on, so this should be interesting.
Oh, my.
We've got some questions from our listeners. Thank you to everyone who contributed a question. These came from thecultcast.reddit.com, our new Reddit community where we hang out and chat with each other. Let's start with an easy one. Buster Stubbs 69 wants to know your routine for maintaining your buns of steel. You're coming out with a video about this, like a video series about this, aren't you, Buster?
I believe he's working on his buns right now.
He's working on his buns at this very moment.
Man.
Either that or we lost him. Good. Okay, Buster's back, and you were saying it's burritos are the key, right? To
the main key, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, carne asada burritos. Yeah,
gotta get fuels the
right
fire.
Ingredients.
Protein
yeah.
is important. I in my mind, I had always just envisioned you standing in the mirror, looking back at yourself like Beyonce, just flexing for like an hour to 2 hours
day?
A day.
No, that doesn't breed results, actually. I learned that from The Rock. Yeah, you got to get out there and get it.
How much
you learned that from The Rock?
Yeah, The Rock.
He also has a Buns of Steel workout program.
Yeah, you haven't heard of it?
No. What's it called?
Just The Rock.
Just The Rock?
Yeah.
Ellipses Hard Buns program?
Yeah, huh?
Buster, how much twerking do you do?
Yeah.
Minimal to working. because I just am not coordinated enough to shake my booty like that.
The turbo shake especially, that's hard to perfect. Yeah, it's not easy. It looks easy on TV, but it's not. This is one of the questions that I wanted to ask. It just kind of threw my own in here. Does anyone have an embarrassing date story that they want to share?
I'm Buster, a suave you said you don't, guy, right? So I would never have an embarrassing date story. That's just totally foreign to me.
That's a very good point. David, how about you?
My dating history is littered with embarrassment.
You have a short story you can tell us.
Two short stories. One is I did take a woman to a Kool & the Gang concert.
Oh, right.
Senior year in high school, and I found out after the date she could burp the alphabet.
Oh,
sexy.
Yeah.
That is sexy.
Yeah. She was a good kisser, but, you know, also a good burper. And, you know, those two things don't go well.
Yeah, especially not at the same time.
and then in college, I was kissing a girl, and a tooth fell out. My tooth.
Oh, yeah.
I had this little one-tooth bridge.
You're kidding? Yeah. In her mouth?
It came out into my mouth, but there was like this clicking sound, and I stopped and I said, "Hold it," and I pulled out my tooth.
So, 1 second.
So yeah.
Wow. And did she leave or did she stick with you after that?
Well, she stuck with me through the morning anyway.
Oh, okay. And then she never talked to me again.
We never talked again, but
I was on a date. I don't remember how old I was. I decided to take this girl to Denny's, you know, as classy guys do. I think it was really late. You know how sometimes you just end up at Denny's?
Oh yeah.
And we had gotten our food. We were both really hungry, and the date had been going pretty well so far. And I was like, this chick obviously is liking my brand, you know? And I grab over smoothly, I grab the ketchup, and I start to shake it. And as I shake it, the cap comes off, and half the contents of the bottle explodes out onto my face and down my shirt.
Nice. What was her reaction?
And then she left, disgusted. Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I think we actually ended up dating for a while after that. Because I just played it off so cool. I was like looking at her all slyly. I was like, "You want to dip your fries in this, baby?" I don't think I said that, actually. I think I was just mortified. Okay. This one comes from AMJ501. Hey, girl. She says, "What TV shows are you all into? Which series, if canceled, would you be most upset by?" Buster.
Well, Game of Thrones, yeah.
No spoilers, please.
I know, because...
Are you watching it?
Why wouldn't I be watching it, man? Why aren't you watching it?
Because I'm so far behind.
Oh, my gosh.
I need to pick it back up. You
can't cry about spoilers if you're 5 seasons behind, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm on season... I think I'm on season 4. So what is that, 2 seasons behind?
Yeah.
3. They just started 6, didn't they?
Yeah.
Mine is The Walking Dead.
Ugh.
Do you guys watch The Walking Dead?
It's so horrible now.
You think The Walking Dead's horrible?
I don't think it's that great of a show, yeah.
You're the first person I've ever heard say that.
I mean, it used to be a good show, but now I find it kind of, I don't know, not that great.
Season 3 was a little bit wacky when they end up, you know, with the governor and all that stuff. But I thought it found its pace again in season 4, and I haven't actually started season 5 yet, but that's definitely...
You want a spoiler?
No, I don't want a spoiler, please. I do not want any spoilers.
Yeah, it's funny how I don't even watch that show, but I could tell you everything that happens in season 5.
Really? Man, it's hard to avoid spoilers. Like, even Game of Thrones stuff. You know, it's like iTunes is promoting, or was it iTunes? Yeah, I think it was iTunes, was promoting Game of Thrones. It was on my Apple TV, too. And they show pictures of characters, like in huge, you know, banners. And you're like, well, I know that guy's still alive.
Oh man!
Like, but just by knowing who's alive, still, it's a massive spoiler. And I mean, what can you do, right? I'm so far behind. I mean, what are they gonna do? Not show pictures of characters? But it still sucks when you wait that long. David, what do you got for us?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn, is that Andy Samberg's show?
Andy Samberg's show. And you know, the great thing about it is, you know, we love Andy Samberg. We loved him on Saturday Night Live. But this cast is great. And each person is funny in their own right, and it's by no means Andy Samberg's show. It is that entire cast. So, very funny. Check it out.
What channel is that on?
Fox.
Fox, yeah.
Okay. I don't have cable, so...
See, I don't have cable either. That's when I'm watching the networks.
Yeah.
So...
Well, wait a second. So, when you say you're watching the networks, is that one... Is that openly available?
Yeah, it's a free channel. Cable? You get it on an antenna.
On an antenna, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah. And oh, because really? I'm in the path of a runway, and the planes are... just about to land when they come over our house. It interrupts the signal every 5 minutes, but
<You're kidding. clears
throat> I managed to get my TV in.
So, the plane's not very, very high from your house when it's going down?
No, the gears are down and they're, you know, you can almost wave to the pilot. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay, let's wrap up with this one from N. Harrell. He says, what is your fave Apple Watch face or your most used one? David, do you have an Apple Watch?
I don't.
Okay. Oh. Well, that answers that question.
I don't even have a watch.
Yeah. You know, I never had a watch before Apple Watch either. I wasn't ever really a watch guy. I'm not even sure I'm a watch guy now. Buster, which one do you use most?
I only use the modular one because it's got the most crap that you can... on it.
That's the one I use too. That's the one where you can, it has all the complications, right, in one window.
Yeah,
definitely the most useful. You can get so many different little snippets of information in one little watch face. The other one that I use that I can't remember the name of, and I'm actually not wearing my Apple Watch, so I can't tell you, is the one that, it's just a simple watch face. I think it might even be like a classic watch face. And it allows you to have two complications. One is the date, and then the other one, I think you could choose whatever you want. But it's not nearly as useful as the modular one.
Oh, I think it's like the utility one is what it's
Maybe
called.
Maybe that one's it.
I used the extra large for a while, but...
Did you?
I think that's another one. You can only have two complications on it, and I'm like, I need more complications.
I did too. I did too. I need as much information as possible.
Yeah,
and the one that the modular one is great because you can see like current temperature, what the high and the low will be. I mean, you can cram all sorts of stuff into that watch face. They really do need more watch faces, don't they? They haven't really released any in a long time. I guess it was since WDC last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, they need third party watch faces. I think.
I agree. Do you think we'll ever get those?
I hope so. I mean, it's ridiculous that there's not, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why they haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't. Those things would sell like crazy. I mean, most of them would look like crap, but you'd get like several developers who
you'd get
who
some decent ones. Them. Yeah.
Yeah, who would actually put like effort into designing them. Alrighty, well, with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. If you want to get your website going, head on over to squarespace.com. Get signed up for your 2-week free trial. That's all the cool casts we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, I'm at AirFund, Buster's BST3R. David doesn't even use Twitter.
Mm-mm.
So you can't follow him anywhere unless you want to send him a letter. We can like put his address in the show notes.
And I like I like letter with perfume on it. So
okay, we'll keep that in mind.
Yes, please.
Rub some of my scent on there. This has been the CallCast, the best 30-plus-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CallCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. David, I'll let you do it again. Do you remember how it goes?
Next week.
No.
Next time.
Next time.
let's start over. Next time.
Perfect. Yeah, good.
Thank you.
All right. And we're clear.
Beautiful.
Okay, we're doing a get-to-know-your-cultist at the end of the episode, Buster.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any good embarrassing date stories?
No, not really.
I got one I can tell you guys.
Okay.
There's one distinctly that I remember. That was pretty wonderful.
I took a girl to a Kool and the Gang concert in the 80s, and she could burp
okay,
the
don't
alphabet.
Tell us.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell us yet. Okay. We got to wait to the segment. Kool and the
Gang. Okay.
I like how that story starts, though. You know it's going to be good when it starts with, I took a girl to a Kool and the Gang concert.
She's so fresh.
It can only go downhill from there. And that's when my girlfriend became Kool and the Gang's girlfriend. And the whole gang.
Yeah.
I drove home alone and crying.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right.